telling it as it is. David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the David Curtin Show here on today's News Talk, TNT. Now, the main talk in the news today is, was there a big attack on Iran by Israel in the middle of the night? There were lots of reports of big bombs going off near the city of Isfahan in central Iran. As the hours have gone on, however, that seems to have been played down, and it doesn't seem like there's anything that has happened that has caused major damage. So let's hope that this is just something that will save a bit of face. No damage, no one killed, and people can just de-escalate after this and move on. Of course, however, the mainstream media is playing this up and trying to get everyone afraid of a third world war and talking up the war narrative. But something has interested me more than this, to be honest, in the news today. And this is something that will and can possibly affect our everyday lives in the place where we live. And I'm concerned about this because, of course, there are local elections coming up in England, in many places, on the 2nd of May, only 2 weeks away now. And if you want changes to happen in your own locality, you need to focus on what's happening in here rather than what the war narratives that are being perpetrated by the mainstream media. So what happened this week? I think yesterday we got the result of a court case between a citizen, Sasha Rodoy, who is 70, lives in the London borough of Barnet. And she took Barnet Council to court to try to get them to remove some LED, street lighting that they put in 4 years ago in January 2020. Immediately that they were put in, she found that she couldn't sleep. She has a condition called photophobia because she had some eye surgery. So she was very, very personally affected by the installation of LED lights. They didn't take her complaint seriously, apparently, so she took them to court. Things take a long time to get through the courts, but eventually the judgment was made in her favour and Barnet Council were ordered to remove the street lights, the LED street lights in her cul-de-sac, and they are going to replace them with the kind of lights that were there previously. Nice orange glowing sodium vapour lights, which we traditionally have had all around the country in the UK, whichever part of the UK we're in. I like them. They glow orange. They have a nice candor to them. They're dim, but they're friendly. They're warm, and everybody likes them. But because of the climate alarmist agenda, and it is to do with Agenda 2030, councils around the country are in the process of replacing all of those old but nice sodium vapor lights around for our street lighting and putting in these harsh, nasty, stern LED lights that glow really bright white, and they're like living in Guantanamo Bay in your own street. After the ruling was given, the claimant, the complainant, Sasha Rodoy, said that the council tried to get her to sign a non-disclosure agreement without even offering anything in terms of paying her legal fees, because they didn't want anybody to know about the case, which is completely preposterous. The courts should be open. Judgments should be open. A judgment should not be given or implemented on the basis that someone signs a non-disclosure agreement. She refused, and you got her lawyers to press the council anyway to change the lights back to the sodium vapor lamps, and they're going to do that. Obviously, she didn't sign the non-disclosure agreement because she wanted everybody to know about the case, and this actually is a case that sets a very important precedent in law. You now have the right as a citizen to get your counsel or take your counsel to court if they have replaced the warm, friendly, human-friendly, almost animal-friendly sodium lamps with these harsh, horrible LED street lights. And the precedent here means that the councils will almost certainly be ordered to change them, particularly if you have a health condition. I know from my own experience, I used to live in the London borough of Bexley. I lived there for 5 years when I was on the London Assembly. When I moved in, there again, there were lovely, it was a conservation area. There were lovely sodium lamps on the streets. One day, they just were replaced by LED lamps. And also, I lived next to a school, and the school put in LED floodlights in their car park. So every part of my house was flooded at night by this horrible LED lighting, and it was very hard for me to get to sleep. You know what I had to do? In the end, the only way I could get to sleep was I actually had to put a mattress over the window to block out the LED lights because it was so harsh and so bright. It did actually affect my sleep. So I have a lot of sympathy with Sasha Rodoy, the complainant, in this case, because I've experienced the same thing myself. I didn't complain about it and say anything publicly. I did once ask a written question to Sadiq Khan what he was going to do about it, but I think that the response was, well, it's not his problem because it's the boroughs in London that are in charge of the street lighting, which actually is true. You have to take your boroughs to court or to complain to them if you have a problem. Now, there are 317 local authorities in England. Local councils are a bit of a mess. You know, there's some places have one, some places have two. There's a county council, there's a district council, there's a unitary authority, whatever. But one of those, where you are, will be responsible for your street lighting. Now, this is something that people have suffered in silence about far too long. These LED lights do affect your sleep. There is evidence that they do cause long-term health effects, which are negative, particularly if they affect your sleep, particularly if they affect your circadian rhythms. And maybe for some people, they can also affect your eyesight. I don't want to say that for sure, but I don't want to put any negative feeling on anybody about their eyesight. But, you know, there are studies that show they can have an effect. What I would do if I was in a council, if I was a councillor, I would get rid of them all and go back to the warm orange sodium vapor street lighting, which is lovely. It's human friendly. It gives everybody a nice feeling about where they live. You don't need any more than that. We certainly don't need these harsh Guantanamo style LED lights everywhere. I completely oppose that. And I'm very, very glad that Sasha Rodoy has won her court case against Barnet Council to get them to remove the LED lights in her street. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make American great again?
People are talking about.
Vilifying MAGA, it's just not going to work.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show here on today's News Talk, TNT. Gemma Cooper is with me to tell us about the latest in breaking news and the UK news headlines. Welcome to the show, Gemma.
What a lovely good news story to end the week on, David. I'm with you on the LED lights. And in fact, the Royal Automobile Association, the RAC, but arguably the biggest motoring organisation in the country with millions of members, is lobbying the government for LED lights in cars because saying now they're just too bright, they have a detrimental effect on road safety, that, you know, they're coming towards you in the middle of the night, you're completely dazzled. I'm sure there are many, if you're listening in the chat, that resonate with that. And they do have a terrible effect on the human psyche, don't they? And I had a big lovely orange street light outside my old property in my bedroom window for years. And I found it very comforting when it would come on at lighting up time. And in the morning when it went off, I would know it's time to get up. And it was a lovely light. So what did they do? Of course, 2020, exactly what you've just been talking about, replaced it with some horrible, harsh, acidic, nasty, bright prison style thing, which nobody asked for, nobody wanted. And yet local authorities seem to have plenty of money, don't they, to replace these LED lights. They don't have any money to repair the potholes in the roads. But when it comes to the light, fighting an Agenda 2030, they got plenty of money for that. And nobody likes them. Nobody. I've never met a single person who thinks it's a good idea. So I'm delighted to hear that story on a Friday. It's always so nice to end the week on a positive note. So thanks for that, personally.
You're welcome. You know, really, I'm really was so chuffed when I heard that story. And, you know, as I say, nobody likes them. Like you say, everybody hates them. It's just happening anyway. But not many people realize that they can do anything about it. But apparently, with Barnet Council, they have had 368 complaints over the last 6 years, 301 of them about brightness. But, you know, this is actually someone taking them to court and forcing them with a court ruling to actually go back to these lovely warm sodium lights that we have. You know, this really is an attack on our psyche, our mental state of well-being. And people realize that. And actually, it's good what you said. The RAC are taking a stand on this because it doesn't just affect street lighting. It affects you on the road as well. I mean, they're horrible. I think everybody would have who's a driver would have experienced at night, a different level of glare as LEDs have become, standard in modern cars. It's really no good.
No, absolutely. So, and it's a lovely story as well, just an example of one person standing up against the system. And it's the globalist system that Sasha was standing up against, Agenda 2030, without a doubt, and winning. You know, I think sometimes it's easy after the last 4 years to think, oh, can we really affect change? Can we take on the system? Yes, we can. And that's a lovely story. On to some headlines, though, of today in the UK. And this is a follow-up from a story that we first broke on TNT yesterday, that police have now confirmed they're looking into Mark Mingus, the MP in part of the northwest of England, who allegedly phoned a campaign aide last December at 3 o'clock in the morning, asking for £5,000 to be given to him to help him out of a sticky situation with some bad people. Police are now saying they are going to look at this to see if there's any criminal charges that need to be brought. The aide that originally made the complaint to the Conservative Party about Mark Mingus's behaviour says she's absolutely appalled that it's taken so long. She was promised an investigation, she says, straight away. She's speaking out today, and she said the Conservative Party did nothing. She said she's really lost faith in the party and the political system. Rishi Sunak has just given a big speech at the Centre for Social Justice in London about clamping down on Sick Note Britain. Some interesting points were made there about the 2.8 million people currently signed off long-term sick. Rishi Sunak has said he's going to strip GPs, doctors, of their power to sign people off and instead refer people to wellness and work coordinators to get people back into work. He says it's the government's moral duty, and he says things have never been the same since the pandemic. Well, we wonder why that is. People's mental health has suffered. And the husband of the former First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, her husband Peter Murrell, was last night charged in connection with embezzlement of party funds, £660,000 of donations for an independence referendum. Charges have been brought, so we can only say very little about that case. Be careful what you say on social media, because proceedings are now active. And also, I wondered how long it might be before we saw this story. It's emerged that hundreds of people have been referred by the UK taxman to a suicide hotline, the Samaritans, after this is to do with a loan charge scandal, which we've discussed before. People have become suicidal over the demands the taxman was making, so they referred them, I shouldn't be laughing, it's not funny at all, to a suicide hotline rather than dealing with the problems themselves at the tax office.
Goodness me. I mean, that last story, I mean, it just seems like absolute gaslighting, doesn't it? You know, they put someone out of a home and then they refer them to the Samaritans. I mean, that you just showing absolute disdain for ordinary people there. I mean, the other story you mentioned as well about cancelling the ability of GPs to give out sick notes to people. I know we do have a big problem at the moment. You know, the number of people you said is 2.8 million on long-term disability benefits or out of work. But you think there are genuine reasons for most of them. But then what is this new fangled thing that they're talking about that just sounds like a load of corporate guff? Well, wellness and work commissioners, is that what you said?
Well, yeah, wellness and work professionals, specialist right. work and health professionals is the quote that Rishi Sunak has used in this speech this morning. Specifically vague, if there is such a thing. Specialist work and health professional, what does that mean? It doesn't mean GP, who is the best person to, you would argue, to first of all assess your fitness for work. It's a specialist professional. It does sound like a lot of corporate, I wouldn't say guff, I would say corporate bullying, actually, you know, a work professional who's going to assess people's ability to be able to do their jobs. And anxiety and depression make up more than half of the 2.8 million currently signed off on long-term sick. And that's not even, you know, the economically inactive figure of the 16 to 64 year olds is actually 9 million, but it's nearly 3 million of those because of long-term sickness. So you have a doctor's note and you're still ostensibly employed, possibly on full pay in some cases, depending on your contract with your company, or on statutory sick pay if you're in employment, or you're just not fit to work at all. So what he said this morning is it's all due to the rise in people off work since the pandemic. He said something's gone horribly wrong since 2020. People were off work and they haven't gone back. Simple as that. And he says now it's a moral duty for the government to get back into work, and everybody will be supported. And he says it's economically unsustainable for this amount of people, this percentage of the potential workforce, to be off. Of course, it's economically unstable because they need our taxes, don't they, David? The government needs us to work. It needs us to pay tax to give them the money so which they can go off and fund wars that we didn't agree with. It is as simple as that. If you listen to TNT, you'll know that. It's nothing to do with the dignity of work for the person concerned. It's to do with contributing to the matrix, to the system, to provide money to pay for things that we didn't necessarily want or need. Anyone who doesn't comply with their conditions set out by their specialist work coach can have their sickness benefits closed and benefits removed entirely. So again, a lot of coercion here. And you must be, you know, really willing to accept any available job that your work coach, whoever the work coach is, thinks you're suitable for. If you don't accept one within 12 months, you're likely to have everything stripped from you. So again, echoes of the last 4 years, no jab, no job. This one is, you know, don't do what you're told, no benefits, no money. So you better go and get a job. Interesting, though, the unemployment figures came out earlier this week and more people are unemployed than ever. Is that because of a shortage of jobs? This unemployment figures are people looking for work. So are there the jobs there? That's the other question that needs to be asked in the UK economy. Are the jobs actually there? But yeah, he's come out all guns blazing on a Friday, just as most people are downing tools for the weekend. He's saying, no, I want you all in work. I want you all in work.
Well, it sounds like he's electioneering here. It sounds like he's playing to his base. You know, he's lost huge numbers of people, millions of people who are disgusted with his party for warmongering, for not controlling our borders, for getting us into a huge financial mess, for destroying the economy. And here he is coming out with a statement that is targeting people and is going to make life worse for people. And quite frankly, most of those people are not going to vote Conservative, never have done, never will do. But maybe he's hoping he's going to get back, you know, a few hundred thousand people who like, you know, oh, Rishi's getting tough on people on benefits. We're going to vote for him. Honestly, I don't think it's going to work because I think people are already too disgusted with him. And it's not something that's going to affect the people who would have voted for the Conservative Party before. So he's really just gaslighting the most vulnerable people in society for nothing, for no reason whatsoever. Just shows what kind of people are in the fake Conservative Party, in my view. You might disagree. That'd be interesting to see what you think. Anyway, thanks, Gemma, so much for bringing those stories, and hope you have a lovely weekend. See you again next week. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Dirk Polman.
There was a plan on the British side to immediately after the victory over Germany to continue the war, to push the weakened Soviet Union back over over backwards. Yeah, so that is something that is not well known. That plan has been, you could find it on the internet and then it's off and on sometimes again. It's very difficult. It's not long. It's something like, if I recall correctly, something of 30 pages, I would say. I read it.
The Soviets had this coup in Czechoslovakia in 1948. And that in that appeared as the Soviets really was pushing forward, and they would they thought that this means that we have to start an alliance against the Soviets. And that was NATO became.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Listen up!
Now listen, we gotta talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk, TNT. It's really good to have with me on the show now as my first guest, David Charalambos, who is the founder of Reaching People, that looks into how people are influenced by nudging and all those kind of things that we've learned about over the last 4 years, and is also a partner in the World Council for Health Coalition. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to see you, David.
Good to see you. So you have looked into all of this nudging and manipulation that has been done. I mean, we've become aware through lockdowns and through the coercion to get injected of behavioral psychology units in the government and so on. I mean, how much are we nudged and manipulated in our lives, in our everyday lives, that we don't even realize?
Well, I think I did an interview with Gary Sidley a few weeks ago, and he's just had a paper published looking into how the UK government used it during the pandemic. And the conclusion was it's ubiquitous. It is everywhere in everything. And I think you alluded to it. The dangerous part of it is you don't know. Okay. One of the most famous ones who wrote a book called Before You Know It, he was talking to his brother-in-law who's a rocket scientist. And the rocket scientist brother-in-law says, well, how's this social psychology coming along? He says, well, we're coming to a conclusion that so many of our judgments and our decisions are unconscious. And this the rocket scientist turns around and says, but that can't be. I can't think of a single time that's happened. And of course, that was the point. You wouldn't know. And I think what people are realizing is that consent and opinions are being manufactured. And people are under the illusion that they've come up with that thought. And if you watch Darren Brown or anybody with his sort of skills, you can see the technology is there for a person to think they've had the thought and it's not there. So this really concerned me. So I've spent just endless hours the last 4 years really looking into it. And I've studied the subject wider for 25 years. So, yeah, and I couldn't stay quiet, and many people felt the same.
Yeah, I mean, just today, I mean, this is a sort of innocuous example, but I saw a headline today, how mayors became the fashionable thing in England. And I looked at that and I thought immediately they're trying to plant a thing on multiple levels. They're trying to get people to accept the idea of mayors like Sadiq Khan, that everyone likes it, that it's just something that's fashionable. You know, it's a cultural thing. But, you know, this is a political manipulation going on.
Yes, exactly that. It's invisible influence. There was a book of that name written by Jonah Berger, and it showed how people are socially influenced about those around them. Many people want to adopt an opinion that's socially acceptable. If you ask people why they followed the policies the last 4 years, they're not really going to know, because they've been so manipulated. So they're going to give you the most socially acceptable answer. So that headline is basically saying, this is the in thing, this is the common thing, this is what people think. So, you know, it'd be a good thing to think.
Well, another thing that very much concerns me is with the situation in the Middle East at the moment, is that everybody is being manipulated to take a side. And it seems like the powers that be don't mind whether you're pro-Palestine or whether you're pro-Israel. They just want people to get wound up and then start, you know, fighting each other. I mean, do you see that that is something that's going on with
it's
this?
It's a very common tactic. It's thousands of years old. It's divide and conquer. It's give people two options, and both of those options are not good. And we've got it in politics. And when I watched one of your interviews, you pointed it out. You've got the Tory party or the Tory party light. Like, which choice do you want? Like, it's the same policies, they're the same people funding both of them. I think conflict of interest used to be a thing. You know, we used to worry about conflict of interest. Now you've got the MHRA calling themselves enablers. Hang on a minute, you're supposed to regulate. So you've got the governing bodies being governed by those they're supposed to govern. And this is the problem.
Yeah, they're supposed to be looking after citizens, aren't they? They're supposed to be have our best interests at heart, but they seem to be have the best interests of big corporations. I mean, obviously, Big Pharma is a big player in this. I mean, how have Big Pharma influenced us? I mean, what are their main tactics that you've seen over the last few years?
Well, they're one of the most pervasive users of behavioral science. Look at the Overton's window, which I'm sure you know about, which what you just mentioned is really key. It's called a double bind. You give people two options, and both those options are not good. So effectively, people were given the option of you comply or you get excluded from society. Okay. And then that was pushed. And then you were given three options about which, you know, genetic modification you took. That wasn't really an option, was it? It's not a good choice. But that's what's faced of it. And I think, you know, there's so much money pummeled into this now that, you know, I saw Angus Dalgliesh speak on Sunday, and he said science is almost dead. You know, you can't speak up, you're silenced. And then, of course, you would have known a few years ago, it happened to you, that meeting I watched, you asked a very reasonable question, and everyone responded as though you had sworn at someone. It was just insane.
Yeah, I think I asked Nadeem Zahawi about adverse health effects from the vaccine, and that was quite early on. That was January or February 2021, and there was a report from a care home in Norway where some people had been jabbed and they'd all died. And I was like, well, this is evidence. So I just said, you know, shouldn't we take more precautions? Yeah, and everybody was like, cut him off, you know. One of them started to wave their hands around like a nut.
Well, that was the one that wound me up the most, waving their hands, because it's like, because this is the thing with the behavioral science, it can get people to a conclusion and they thought they've arrived at the conclusion themselves, and then they see you as the person that's causing the problems, but what's missing there is there's no conscious evaluation. The way that they responded was in a split second. That makes sense. It was just an instant judgment, and that's what they're looking for, really. When you look at the design of supermarkets now, they want people walking around in a trance, just pulling. I mean, you know what it's like. If you're hungry and you go shopping, it's a disaster. But this is what the environment is being designed, not for how best use, but for corporations to make best profits. You know? And it's really, this is, and when you look at, it always comes back to the old thing, cui bono, isn't it? Who is the person who benefits? And you look at the media used to serve the public, but now their funding largely comes from advertising revenue and governments, and people don't bite the hand that feeds them.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Look, we're going to have a quick news break and we'll come back and talk more about this very important subject in a minute. This is today's News Talk, TNT. Here we go.
TNT Radio News.
News. Matt Boylant here with your TNT headlines. Despite insisting it supports a two-state solution, the US has used its veto power to block a resolution calling for Palestine to be granted full membership in the United Nations. London and Washington have announced sweeping sanctions against Iran's military drone program in response to its retaliatory strikes against Israel. And over 160 Ukrainian children who were supposed to have been kidnapped by Russia have been found living in Germany.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk TNT. Now, David Charalambos is here. We were just talking about how we are nudged and manipulated constantly by behavioral psychologists in ways that we don't even know about. And one thing a few people have heard of is this program called Mindspace. I've heard of this. I don't know all of the details of this, but I think this is some kind of blueprint for how to get people to a certain behave in a certain way. Can you tell us more about that and how it works?
Yeah, so it's an official government document that if you do a internet search and you just put Mindspace in government, it will pretty much be the first one that's come up. And what they've done is they've looked at all the information in behavioral science and they've chose what they consider to be the 9 most important elements of influence in someone. And the subtext of that document, I think it says public influence through, you know, controlling behavior through public policy, I think it is. And it goes out to all the departments. And then what you see is you see documents and adverts being designed to reach people on a level they're not aware of. Mm. And in page 66 in that document, it mentions if the public find out about this, they're not going to be happy because consent is important. On page 67, it talks about manipulating people's identities. Now, that is so important because I think one of the greatest traits of us is that we want to think that we have free will. We want to have control over ourselves. And what the technology is saying that people can be influenced without their knowledge. And of course, and they can have their identity. So you look at a lot of people that believe in the certain ideologies that are being pushed. Do they really believe in them? Or have they just been so conditioned to think they believe in them?
Yeah. Well, you know, the archetypal story of this is the fly in the urinals and that it stops splashing in toilets. And that people use that as an example of behavioral modification, which actually was good. It had a positive benefit. But nobody realized that was actually having a mass effect on what people did in that just one small scenario. So it is quite frightening that there must have been decades and decades of research into this to refine it, to find out the most powerful ways. It's almost like witchcraft, isn't it? Actually,
it can be, you know, and that's the thing. It could be used for good. I mean, if the public was shown how their mind actually works and how to make better decisions, how to control their behavior, I'm sure everyone wants to eat healthier. They would like to go to the gym, all these things. And there's elements that allow that to happen. And you could argue that the urinal thing is an innocuous, simple thing that's not really, it's not really taking away your free will, is it? It's not really affecting you. It's just, you know, you're just, you know, you've been in a different place.
Yeah.
But when they start to use guilt and shame to force you to take a product that you don't really want to take, but because everyone else around you is taking it, you feel such peer pressure, then we have problems. And there, and Gary Sidley's paper has a number of quotes which are just startling. One of them was, the young do not feel suitably scared. We need to scare them more. Right. And it was literally, they don't think that they're at great risk. Well, that's what the statistics reflected. So they're not really concerned with reality. They're concerned with implementing whatever they want to happen, they're going to find a way to do it. That's really where it comes down. And even David Halpern initially said, I think it was back in 2017, it must be under consent. But that disappeared. Obviously, when emergencies come in, all of the good intentions tend to sort of get swept under the carpet, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I can see this applied in the whole climate alarmism arena because, you know, as a scientist with a background in chemistry, you know, I'm not frightened at all of carbon dioxide, but people are being scared to death. They're all going to die and the planet is going to turn into toast in the very near future, which is complete nonsense. But a lot of young people really are genuinely terrified. I don't know how that's happened. Yeah.
Well, it's basically a lot of it's repetition. I mean, if you say something safe 1,000 times, that doesn't make it any more safe from a scientific viewpoint, you know, but the unconscious mind will presume it's safer because if we see something so often, it comes up as being, it must be more frequent than it is. And this is why the media has a huge power now, because you know, we don't operate on reality. We operate on our perception of reality. So if you think the world's going to end in a few weeks, or a few years, or a few, well, there's going to be disastrous behaviors.
Yeah. How can we protect ourselves from this? Because, you know, I think I am fairly well protected, and I look at everything in the media to see what is the manipulation here. I mean, that's how I see things. And, you know, when I was on the London Assembly, to go back to that story, I was the only one. I was like one against 24 people, you know, not taking an injection, not wearing a mask, saying we didn't need to lock down. And they all were really, they weren't rational. They were visceral and emotional against me, to the point where they actually asked, you know, when are you going to put people in prison for spreading misinformation? But I feel I'm fairly well inoculated, you know, in my mind against that kind of thing. But how can we get to that point?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. The first thing is to know that it exists. That's really important, because we have a false sense of security that we can't be influenced. And all the behavioral scientists I work with, and we know that we can. So generally, I watch as little TV as possible. I never watch the news. If I want to know what they're pushing, I read it. Because what it is, the brain, when you're reading, you're fairly protected, because you can, you know, you can read word by word. But when you're watching a TV or movie, there's all this information in the background going in. And when you watch Darren Brown, that's what he does. He puts a lot of information in the background that you won't be aware of, but your mind's going to use. That makes sense. So when you look at a lot of the agendas, they're pushed through because it's common knowledge. I think Patrick Fagan, when we were in one of the documentaries about television, he pointed out that the Dirty Dancing scriptwriter wrote it to change people's opinions on abortion. That was the main point of the film, but no one really knew about that. And of course, what they do is they make the person that has the abortion, you know, a victim, and she needs to protect herself and all this. So, you know, whatever your views on it are, I think it's to when you're presented with additional options, to know that that's happening consciously. Yeah. So if someone's trying to manipulate your opinion without your knowledge or consent, then that's, I think, when we have a problem. But coming back to how to protect yourself, I'd recommend everyone have a look at Mindspace. Think about, you know, the point you mentioned was really important. What does this person want me to believe? Okay. And when you start thinking about that, so then you look at that sentence you mentioned, what's the assumption? Okay. And then you just test, are the assumptions true? So the BBC ran a thing, when are you going to get your vaccine? What's the assumption there?
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. Right, so you hang on a minute. The question, should I? The question, has it been? So one of the other documents that I think is very dangerous was the Stephen Hawking Foundation document. And this was went into all the schools in London. And it was a 40-page PowerPoint presentation using every psychological manipulation trick in the book to get children to want to get the vaccine. So they go home and they get the parents to say, I want this. I was spoken to a lawyer, and one child in one of the schools, they asked the kids, is anyone not going to take it? This child put her hand up. Then they made the child come to the front of the class and tell the other kids why they weren't going to take it. Think about the peer pressure there. I mean, this is the sort of thing that's going on, that kids want to fit in. I mean, for a kid to go against every other member of the class, it's going to be difficult. So this herd mentality is a useful part of evolution, but it can be very dangerous when the people controlling what we consume may not have our best interests at heart.
Absolutely. This is going on all the time, but I'm so glad you're here to speak out against it and actually give us real insights into this and you know, give people real strategies to overcome it and to think about how they're not going to be manipulated by this. I'd love to talk to you so much more. There's so much to talk all day about this.
If the finish point would be that this has been happening since, you know, since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
And it's been discovered. And when you understand how you work at a much deeper level, you get so much more power back. And that's the point. At the moment, they've had the power to influence us at a much deeper level. Now we can get that power back by informing ourselves.
Brilliant. Take your power back, everybody. That's a good, wonderful message to end on. Fantastic. David Charalambos, thank you so much for joining me on today's News Talk.
Thank you, David.
Sometimes life can be overwhelming, and suicide may seem like the only way to relieve the pain. Beyond Now is an evidence-based app created by Beyond Blue to help you cope when suicidal thoughts start to appear. You can use it to create an easy-to-follow plan that is personal to you, and includes steps like know your warning signs so you can act early, make your environment safe by removing harmful items, activities you can do or people you can be with to distract yourself from suicidal thoughts, reminders of things that make you feel strong. Some of these steps might be tough to fill out, and that's okay. It can be helpful to make or share your safety plan with a trusted friend, family member, or mental health professional. You might feel like you're alone, but help is available. If you're worried you can't stay safe, use the red telephone icon to call your emergency contacts. Download the free Beyond Now app today to create your personal safety plan.
Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. Prediabetes does. One in three adults has prediabetes, but with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. And you can change the outcome. Take the 1 minute prediabetes risk test today. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org.
You're with David Curtin and today's news talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show here on today's News Talk TNT. And it is really good to have with me on the show in this section, Nick Buckley, MBE, who is standing as an independent candidate for the Greater Manchester Mayor. And you're also, Nick, the founder of the Mancunian Way charity that does a lot of work for homelessness and with young people as well. So fantastic things you've done with your life. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the invite.
No, really good to have you on. So at the moment, obviously, the main thing you're doing is standing to be mayor of Manchester, and the elections are on the 2nd of May, so a couple of weeks away. How's the campaign going at the moment?
It's going well. It's hard work. I didn't realise it'd be this tiring. I'm doing 15, 16-hour days. Wow. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's good fun. But then there's been some issues like, because I'm independent, I don't get invited to the hustings. Manchester Evening News newspaper had hustings yesterday. There's only six candidates standing and they only invited five people. BBC have done the same. Small Business Network did the same. So I'm up against it, but I knew I was going to be up against it. And just because a fight's hard doesn't mean you don't fight.
I saw that. I mean, that's absolutely outrageous. I mean, you know, that you were the only candidate that they didn't invite to the hustings. I mean, that's brazenly silencing you or sidelining you, isn't it? I mean, the thing is, there's no law against that. There's no law to say you must invite all the candidates. But really, it's complete bias, and everybody can see that.
Yeah, the only feedback I get back from these organisations is basically independents are not proper candidates.
That's absolute nonsense. Yeah. You've paid a lot of money for the deposit, haven't you?
Yeah, I've taken £10,000 out of my pension pot so I can stand at this election to make a stand.
Wow. I mean, that really is commitment, you know, and I'm glad you have done it, because people have got a real candidate to vote for rather than the uniparty and the fake opposition, as I call them. I think everybody knows who I'm talking about. But you're really someone who cares about the people of Manchester. And, you know, obviously Greater Manchester has had Andy Burnham from Labour as the mayor for, is it 8 years, something like that?
Seven years. Yeah.
7 years. How would you make Manchester better than what we've had over the last 7 years?
Yeah, so something you'll understand is I want to go back to basics. So if I'm elected mayor, there'll be no vanity projects. There'll be no more fantastic multi-billion pound projects that I'll be running or I'll be designing for Greater Manchester, because you can't build anything new when your foundations are crumbling. So my first aim, and the easiest thing to fix, will be Greater Manchester Police, because the mayor of Greater Manchester is also the police crime commissioner, and he can sack the chief constable anytime he wishes. And I'm not going to say I'm sacking the chief constable, but that is what the mayor can do. I've worked with the police for 20 years. I used to be based in police stations. I've trained police officers. I was never a police officer myself. I was a council manager. I understand policing. We need to start reclaiming the streets. Knife crime now is getting to levels of London levels now. people are telling me all the time, you know, they're scared to go out at night on the streets. There's stabbings in Manchester almost every day. There's murders in Manchester now almost every day. We're now finding chopped up bodies now in Greater Manchester. We found one last week in a park, chopped up, wrapped in plastic. Policing is the number one issue. And then we're looking at other things as well. Just like the rest of the country, nothing works in Greater Manchester. Mm. The NHS, the councils, probation, nothing works. Why doesn't it work? Because we never hold anyone accountable. And what I'm going to do as mayor, and the mayor doesn't have as much power as London mayor, but the power, the superpower I will have as mayor is my voice and my access to the press. So I'm going to be looking at what's failing in Greater Manchester, and I'm going to be finding the top civil servant in charge, and I'm going to be naming and shaming that top civil servant to the BBC, to Manchester Evening News, going, this is the person, Jim Smith, making that name up, by the way, Jim Smith is the person who's running this department, and look at what it produces, nothing. Unless we start giving these people some skin in the game, nothing changes. And I'm watching my region, my country just slowly decline and crumble away as if we're not the most amazing country in the world, because we are. And the history books will tell us that. But at the moment, it's just managed decline and I'm sick of it. I can't take any more.
It is horrendous, isn't it? Because you've got a problem of politicians, of the uniparty, the they've all coalesced together, you know, whether it's fake Conservative, Labour, Lib Dem, Green, they're all pushing the woke agenda, the climate agenda. They're more concerned about your opinions on the internet than actually fighting real crime like knife crime and murder, like you've said. But then you've also got the problem of massive infiltration in the civil service, like you've said. And, you know, obviously we're familiar and we talk a lot about the civil service in Whitehall that's to do with national government. But, you know, when I was a London Assembly member, you deal with the mayor's own civil service in the Greater London Authority. You got the Greater Manchester Authority and they got civil servants, and they often get paid several hundreds of thousands of pounds, but then they're just pushing agendas that serve corporate interests or globalist interests, and it's terrible. I mean, how do you get the back to them serving the people?
You need a disruptor. You need someone who says to the people, I'm here for you, which is easy for all politicians say that rubbish. But you need someone who's there for the people and who has a commitment, but the commitment isn't about their career. So let's say I become mayor. I'll do 3 years. I don't care if I'm not voted in again, because I'm going to spend 3 years fixing Greater Manchester. And if I do the right thing and that costs me a career in politics, then so be it. Mm. I'm not doing this for a new career. I'm doing it to fix Greater Manchester. And what we're missing in this country are statespeople. And I'm not for one moment saying I'm a statesperson. Maybe that's what I'm aiming to become. I'm not one. But we have career politicians, and a career politician only cares about their career. What's the next step for me? How do I climb that greasy pole? Mm. We need people who go, this is my vision for Greater Manchester. I'm going to do these things for the benefit of Greater Manchester. And they may not be beneficial until 10, 20, 30 years from now. Mm. But career politicians want success in the next 2 year, 3 year cycle so they can get elected again. We solve no problems in 2 or 3 years. Because they're too complicated to solve. We need someone who will go, I'm putting in plans now that I will not be rewarded for, and somebody else 20 years from now will take the credit for it. But as a statesperson, I don't care. I don't care who takes the credit. I just want things to improve.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've spoken about police and crime. Transport is another area, isn't it? I think where the mayor of Manchester has a lot of power and influence. What will you do in that area to make transport work better in Greater Manchester?
Well, to begin with, I need to make sure our bus services don't go bankrupt, because Andy Burnham now has taken control of the buses in Greater Manchester. He's just spent £5 million painting them yellow. Not buying new ones, by the way. £5 million on painting old buses yellow so they all look the same. That's how we're wasting taxpayers' money. But his new plan is called the B Network in Greater Manchester. In his plan, he has to increase passenger numbers by 30% in the next 5 years, or the whole project goes bankrupt. So if I became mayor, the first thing I need to do is make sure our buses don't go bankrupt. So that's my first thing. Then let's look at the tram system. We've got quite a good tram system in Greater Manchester. It needs extending to other cities and towns. I get that. We need money for that. But even the tram company's own reports say 20% of all passengers on our tram system don't pay. They just use it. So there's 20% of our revenue for the tram system we lose. So all these little problems that people think, well, what's the big problem? Well, the big problem is the people who don't pay are also carrying knives, are also the criminals, are also the people involved in antisocial behaviour and robbing people on the tram system. Let's get back to fixing some of the small problems, because that then will solve some of the big problems a year or two down the line. So that's what I'll be looking at the transport system.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned that with the buses particularly. I mean, that is a big thing, because a politician comes in and they think that they can create some big business structure, but they don't know how to run a business, and it always goes wrong. You know, it doesn't matter which party they're in.
Some of the complaints I've been getting on the B Network is Andy Burnham's big selling point is it's cheaper. I've reduced all the fares. Council taxpayer is basically subsidising the buses. But I've got so many emails of people saying, well, they've not gone down, but they're not cheaper in my area, because I used to get a special deal on this bus route to go to work. And now that weekly, monthly pass now has gone up 50%. So there's always winners and losers when we start messing with the system. And for someone like Andy Burnham, any politician, to think they can mess with an extremely complicated system like public transport, and to think nothing will go wrong, and to think there'll be no dangers, it's just pure silliness. It's incompetence that you think you can mess with such a system.
Yeah, it is. It's hubris as well, isn't it? It's arrogance. Mm. They think they're better. They think they can do. They're more competent than they are. When something is not broken, don't fix it. Don't try to change it. And that is such a waste of money, with painting the buses yellow. I mean, I don't know if they paint things rainbow colours. I mean, that's another thing that I have is a big gripe. Yeah. You have the police all over the place, and certain councils putting in rainbow crossings and rainbow police cars and rainbow trains. I mean, do you have any of that in Manchester?
We do. We have a new chief constable now in Greater Manchester. The other one got sacked because we went into special measures. Again, Andy Burnham didn't get sacked, and he's ultimately responsible for policing, but the chief constable got sacked. But then the new chief constable now has got rid of all the rainbows, the rainbow cars and everything. So he's doing a good job. He'll do better if I'm in charge, but he's doing a good job.
Yeah.
The councils are crazy. They've got rainbow crossings, rainbow this, rainbow that. We've got hotels in the city centre with rainbow flags outside. But the rainbow nonsense is coming to an end. I can feel it. You know, the CAS report, we're looking at the abuse of children now being acknowledged, like the medical profession is abusing children. I've actually said, if I'm mayor, I'll accept complaints and victims who have been physically abused by doctors under this ideology. And if they come forward, if I'm mayor, we're going to investigate and arrest doctors in Greater Manchester. Mm.
Fantastic. That's what needs to happen, because, you know, just following orders and just following an ideology is no excuse when you've actually totally destroyed somebody's life. And, you know, anybody who's been affected by this and has had chemicals and trans surgery is going to be sterile. You know, it's a horrible thing. We've got a couple of minutes left, and maybe just 1 minute left. One of the things I thought was interesting was you said you might have a referendum on whether to keep the role of the mayor of Greater Manchester, or possibly to abolish it. I mean, what is your plans in that area?
Yeah, so that's a promise. If I'm elected, we'll hold a referendum in Greater Manchester about do we want this? Do we want the position of mayor or not? Because we were never asked. There's a hole in our democracy in Greater Manchester. This was forced upon us by the Tory government 10 years ago. So I want to go back to the people and say, do you want this position? And if they say yes, let's keep it. Fantastic. If they say no, we don't want it, let's get rid of it. I'm sick of big government forcing things upon us. When is a solution to any of our problems been more government, more politicians, more bureaucracy, and we're going to pay for it all through our council tax? When has that ever been a solution?
I know. Look, I totally agree with you there. You know, I wish you the very best in getting elected. And I know if you are, you will do the best job of all the candidates. I know it. You know, obviously, Heritage Party is standing for the London Assembly. We've had quite a few independents on who's standing for mayors. We had you, Nick Buckley for Manchester. We've had Andreas Mickley for London, Jonathan Tilt for West Yorkshire. I wish you all the best. But yeah, then hopefully we can save money and get the best deal for the taxpayer as well in our government. Nick, thank you so much for joining me today on today's News Talk TNT.